Fala, meus brutões! Seja bem-vindo no outro lado, onde a gente vai viajando e explorando as trilhas vastas da sua mente. Com que? Com duas pernas e uma grande vantagem de correr. Today, we're coming to you in English, because my guest is, wow, a spectacular athlete, Kyle Richardson. Kyle, how you doing, man?
Hey, Roger. Yeah, thanks for having me on the pod. Yeah, looking forward to talking.
Kyle, we're going to explore a lot of things today. You as an athlete, what your life is like, some of the things that you've achieved over time, your perspective of the trail running scene. But we're going to go deep into your project of Tempo 2, which you did down here in Brazil, and your impressions of Brazil. But to open things up, man, I don't want to put words in your mouth. How would you explain what you do? Basically, the question is, why do you go outside?
Mm. Yeah, no, good question. I feel like me as an athlete, I've always been really inspired by the landscape and the mountains. That's been my big motivator for getting outside. It's to, you know, you wake up in the morning and look out the window and see the mountains. That's what draws me outside. It's not to try to run a fast time or run a far distance. It's all about just experiencing the wild places and sort of reveling in the beauty of the mountains. And so from an early age and all the way up until my early 20s, it was always like that nature was like the driving force for me to get outside. And I moved to Boulder, Colorado a decade ago, so 10 years. And yeah, we just have an incredible backyard, the Flatirons, the different peaks here in Boulder. It's just an incredible place to run. And I think when I moved here, it was just that inspiring nature of the landscape that, you know, was driving me to go outside. And I sort of cut my teeth and developed sort of a name for myself by, I guess I would say, yeah, moving fluidly and efficiently through the landscape and sort of combining elements of climbing and running together. So doing some scrambling and doing stuff that has high stakes, like it's definitely a dangerous style of running, you know, with incorporating these elements of climbing. But that's where I feel like at home, when I'm just moving unencumbered over a technical landscape. And sometimes that means like, oh, I'm following a rocky trail, but then that trail leads to a rock that you can climb up, and then that rock leads to a summit. And so it's like looking at a landscape or a mountain range and looking for those different lines where maybe they're not discreetly laid out on a map, but you can sort of follow the aesthetic of like a ridgeline that incorporates different technical elements that basically involve your full body. So it's a little bit more than just going for a run. So you're incorporating your upper body, your core. It's sort of engaging with the environment with your full body. And I feel like seeking out objectives that have those elements is like what gets me excited to go for a run. So like this morning I went scrambling in the Flatirons and went up to Green Mountain, which is like the mountain above town here. And then ran back. So it's like there's trail running, there's some easy scrambling, there's like steep hiking, like off trail. So it sort of combines all these different elements into like one outing. And I feel like that is kind of the style of running that I like to do. It's, you know, it's a lot of different elements. Sorry, that was a bit long-winded, but...
No, it was beautiful, man. This connection with nature in Boulder... it's famous in the U.S. for being the place for people to do exactly what you're saying, to the point where it's grown a lot. Yep. It's exploded. In Brazil, I don't know if they were really going to fully understand that, but I had Johnny Luna Lima on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and he talked a little bit about the culture there. Could you go a little bit deeper about the different niches? In Brazil, we basically have a niche of trail running, but the sub niches are kind of, they're so obscure that they're not even worth acknowledging. In the U.S., you go much deeper in these niches, where you have an FKT niche, and then within the FKTs, you have niches within the FKTs. Could you explain a little bit life in Boulder and these different communities, the community of trail racing, the community of FKTs, and how that differentiates you as an athlete?
Yeah, for sure. No, that's a great
question. So Boulder is definitely a huge outdoor hub. So I think regardless of the sport or the niche of running that you like, there are people that live here that have a similar viewpoint or similar passion to you. So it's really easy to make those connections within the different groups in town. And I also think part of what maybe creates those sub niches within running is that you do have like this striking landscape. So Boulder has a really big road running scene because there's like dirt roads. It's like relatively flat. You can train for like marathons, really, like I don't know if you've heard of like the Tin Man and these different like road running groups. It's like really great training. You're at altitude. But then if you go into the mountains, you have really steep technical trails. You have more like rolling, buffed out, like nice footing, single track. You have the flat irons. You have the climbing. So you can kind of pick those different avenues, if that makes sense, to like kind of go down. And so someone like Johnny, it's like he's really into doing like the, yeah, mountain running, steep uphill, steep downhill, technical, you know, and we'll be training on Green Mountain and I'll run into Johnny and be like, oh, we should run together. And then all of a sudden you like find someone that, yeah, shares a similar sort of passion for running as you do. Or if you're like out running on the flats training for a marathon, you're going to see other people doing the same thing. So I think we're just in a fortunate spot where there are a lot of people that share the similar, yeah, viewpoints, similar passions, similar skill sets to do these different things. So you can kind of find your little group, if that makes sense.
Who have been some of the examples for you in Boulder or in basically in the trail community or scrambling community who have been the influences for you and have kind of shown you the ropes?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, kind of going way back, it's like people like Buzz Burrell and Bill Wright who kind of like laid a little bit of the groundwork, but then I'm sure a lot of your listeners know of like Anton Krupicka and Joe Grant, like they lived in Boulder. Tony still lives in Boulder, but like those guys definitely helped push the scene, or like what I like to do, more into a little bit more into the light. And so, yeah, it's like definitely following those guys and then different figures that are like, oh, they're scrambling in the Flatirons and like doing these underground races. Like, I'm, you know,
pique my interest
a bit and kind of explore those different avenues by seeing what other people are doing. Those are definitely some of the big names. I mean, Scott Jurek lives here in town. A lot of professionals do live here. So you can get a sense of like, yeah, those different cliques or groups based off, I guess, the people that live here. But I will say that's not all positive. Like with it being such a hub, there is a lot of like insecurities and competitive nature that like kind of fosters in the town, and sometimes that's not healthy. You know, if you're always trying to do the next best thing, like always trying to race, beat your neighbor, that you know, like there's this kind of this competitive nature that you can start to lose sight of the purity or like the pure reason why you're going outside. And so, kind of to get back at what I was saying at the beginning, is like the mountains has always been my motivator and like the reason for me to go outside. And just not to forget that, because it's easy to, yeah, get caught up in the Instagram and like the competition and trying to like, yeah, just be the best in town, I guess, or you know, I get that doesn't mean anything, but there's a good and bad with the culture. And so for people in Brazil, they might see Boulder as like, oh, this is the Mecca. It's like it is that, but there is a side that you don't see on social media and a side that is hard to convey, but yeah, it's not everything that you see online, you know.
As with so many things, yeah. Within this though, I have to ask you, like, what is your opinion of again differentiating between Brazilian trail culture and American? You have a wide menu of races and events you can take part in, which is something we're building here, but it's still a work in process. What is your perspective of some of the larger races that happen? In your neck of the woods, famous races would be Leadville. Yep. And then you have a lot of races that happen there, but like, what is your opinion of those? Are you, just not even, they don't even enter onto your radar, or are they something that you would warn people kind of, hey, be careful with these?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I'm not really too much into racing. Like, I don't race a lot. For all sorts of reasons, and I guess I'm in a fortunate position to be a professional sponsored athlete and not have to make my name on the racing circuit. I just feel like, again, to not to keep going over this over and over, but like the context of what motivates me to go outside is the mountains, and something about like racing, at least in the U.S. at these big races that you just mentioned, sometimes it like it pulls me away from what I really want to be doing, or like what really fuels me to be outside. It's like you pay a lot of money, then you go against all these other people, and I don't know. It's just something about it. It's like not fake, but it's not as pure as what I would like to be doing. Like, what gets me excited is to be out by myself in the mountains, testing myself against the terrain, you know, dealing with the obstacles that the mountains give me, not necessarily something that's formulated by like an organization that's like, okay, you go from here to there, like who's the quickest. I will say that the only reason that racing gets me excited is
the ego, you know,
is wanting to see what I can do against others. It's purely an ego thing. It's not like something deeper. So in terms of like, yeah, doing a Western States or a Leadville, like I don't have any interest in doing those kind of races. I just feel like it's just not my jam, you know, like everyone likes nothing wrong with them, but it's just, yeah, it's just not my, thing. And I feel like they've kind of really hit the mainstream, or the racing in the U.S. here is like, it's a little bit overblown. There's like a lot of hype around a lot of media, which is okay, but it's, I don't know. I feel like you're losing sometimes a little bit of the spirit of running, you know?
Yeah, and I don't think you can repeat that. You can't repeat enough like the purity of being on the trails and that feeling. You just said you don't want to be repetitive, but that is the essence. And these other things, the other layers that we throw on top of this, I think with anything, spirituality, anything like that, there's a base core that so many people can relate to. And then the more layers we put on top of it, the further we get away from that core. But that's something I want to touch back on later, because I want to get some tips in your opinion of how we should grow things correctly here in Brazil as far as our community so we can protect that core. But at the same time, there will be an industry that grows here. And is there a way that we could do things a little bit better in the future? But I want to touch back. This is going to touch back on the purity of the mountain. I want you to talk a little bit more about your relationship with Green Mountain, because your Instagram is a lot of Green Mountain porn. And it looks like you have a very intimate relationship with this mountain. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, for sure.
It's just like
the mountain that I see out my window. It's like from downtown Boulder.
It's the most striking peak
there. It's the closest to town. It's like a 3,000 foot climb, so like 1,000 meters, give or take, from town to the top. So it's like a proper climb. You get to a nice summit. There's a lot of different routes you can go up. You can go scrambling the Flatirons. You can take steep off-trail routes, like more runnable, circuitous trails. So there's like a lot of variety. And so it just makes it like the kind of the ultimate place to go run from town here, because,
you know, there's just a lot of
options and there's a lot of nuance to it. So I feel like it's exciting every time you do it, and like different weather, different days, it's like always something a little bit different. So
in the simplest
way, it's just a really good spot to train and like sort of build fitness and sort of track your progress and work on your skill set of like, whether that's uphill running or downhill running or scrambling. It's like you can kind of pick the different skills you want to work on and find somewhere on Green Mountain that's like really nice to like work on those. So I've done the mountain like over 800 times. It's just like every day, it's kind of like a meditation, you know, like going up the mountain every day. So
How do you feel when you see other people out there on your trails? I'm sure it's something. Do you feel it's something you need to protect there? Do you ever hide routes? Do you ever feel a little bit of, hey, what are you doing here when you see other people on your special trails?
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, I feel like that is people's perception recently, because maybe not other people are talking about it, but there are certainly, like, my friend Jeff, he's done Green Mountain over 1,800 times, so like over 1,000 more than I have. So there's these characters and these older generation of people that have put the mountain into the limelight, and way before I was even running there. So it'd be a disservice not to mention some of these people. So it's definitely not mine by any means. And that sort of is like a very like anti mindset that I would have about going into the mountains, like that it's mine, that I own it or something. It's,
I just want
other people to love it and enjoy it. And that's the reason I talk about it. Like, there's nothing fake about, oh, I'm doing it every day. It's just to prove a point that like, I want to do it every day. It's like, no, I'm doing it every day because I have
intimate relationship
with the place. So that's kind of what keeps me going up there every day. But there, I see all sorts of people up there, people that do it. Yeah. Hundreds and hundreds of times more than me. And like,
so there's a community
that goes up there for sure. Like in the winter, there's like,
I'll run into all my friends
going up and down in the morning, you know, for the sunrise. It's a pretty cool spot.
You mentioned you are a sponsored athlete. You're a professional at what you do. How does that work? I mean, like, what is your relationship? Black Diamond, if I understand right, is your primary sponsor. Without you competing in races, like, how does that relationship work? And could you talk a little bit about being a sponsored athlete? What is that like? And what do you feel your obligations are to the companies that sponsor you?
Yeah. So yeah, my main sponsor is Black Diamond, and they're well known for being a climbing brand. Like, that's definitely their heritage, is way back in the day with Yvon Chouinard and Chouinard Equipment, before like those two companies broke off and you had Patagonia and then Black Diamond. But so the way back to BD is, yeah, it's their heritage is in climbing. And so there's a lot of elements,
from that I
sort of embody with my kind of running. Like, I was talking earlier about scrambling in the flat irons and, yeah, doing more like full body
type of
activities out in the mountains.
That aligns really well
with a company like BD. So I think
I initially
established that relationship by setting some like notable FKTs, doing some, yeah, just different objectives and gaining some notoriety through those objectives that sort of put my name out there. And BD has been slowly growing its sort of like mountain category, which is embodies running, but a little bit more than that. And so I'm lucky to be a part of the brand and sort of be at the early end of crafting new products, coming up with a vision for what like Black Diamond Running could look like. So I feel like I provide a lot of value there in terms of
taking the style of running
that I like to do and sort of
thinking about making
products that are designed for human powered pursuits in the mountains.
Whereas like, I think it's kind of twofold. One,
you could put your name out into the scene by like winning a big race and immediately get a sponsor. Like, you could immediately get like a Hoka sponsorship if you win Western. Or I feel like something like my relationship with BD has been more like fostered and thought about for like kind of a long time. And since the brand is getting into running, there's a lot more room to shape and grow the brand. So I feel like they've invested in me in a way where they're like kind of counting on me and a few others. Like, it's a small team to sort of
take it super seriously
and sort of, yeah, direct the, put the direction of where that brand can go in the running space. And is that in racing? Is that in FKTs? Is that in technical mountain running, like sky running style stuff? Like, where is that position for the brand? And we're kind of
working on that every day.
So I feel like I provide a lot of feedback on where BD should be in that space, but then also work on, yeah, like making gear and packs and like micro spikes and trekking poles and headlamps and apparel. So like a lot of R&D, like a lot, it's a lot of testing and providing feedback. That's like the bulk of, I feel like, the job for me is right now, and which is an awesome spot to be, because I know a lot of people don't have that opportunity to really get to work on products, you know. A lot of it's just like, oh, here's some money and go race. Like, there's no feedback back and forth between the brand and the athlete. So it's been cool to like come up with an idea and see it go to the market and like go to the store and see something that I worked on like hanging on the shelf. But then all the other stuff that athletes deal with, like the social media, the marketing, events, yeah, all that stuff is there too, but not as maybe prominent as some other brands.
That sounds like a really interesting relationship, and one that isn't as obvious because we don't see that as much in the media.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, when the other relationship that you talked about, we see a lot more. It's a little bit more apparent when they have it to show the product more on Instagram and things like that. Can I ask you though, like, do you feel pressure to have social media presence? And like, what it does that? Do you feel it pressured because you're sponsored to endorse the product through social media, whether it's from the company or from your own side of things, feeling an obligation to help the company? And what is your relationship like with Instagram? Because it's something I see you use, but maybe not as actively as other athletes.
Yeah, it's a tool. So I feel like there's good and bad with it. Like, I would have never met you or Ocean or other people in Brazil if it wasn't for Instagram. So it would be a shame for me to like be like, oh, Instagram's the worst, you know? Like, in some ways, it's a really great tool to meet new people, share things that I genuinely like. And so in that light, like, I have a hard time because a lot of people that I talk to about social media, that it's all negativity. It's all negative stuff. It's I'm like, this whole film project with Tempo 2, like, Ocean sent me a message on Instagram. That's how it all started. So, like, if Instagram didn't exist, I would have never met Ocean. I never would have met you. I never would have met anyone in the Brazil running scene. So, it's, like, it's hard. I feel bad, like, talking bad about social media. But I do think if you let it control what you do, or if you're doing certain things to, like, get clicks or views, then I feel like it could become toxic. But certainly my relationship with Black Diamond is, it's like a very organic like process. They don't, it's not a big like ask to be posting on social media. Like, they don't, it's relatively a small ask in the scheme of the professional landscape. Like, a lot of other athletes that I know have to post way more. It's like more calculated on like, oh, like 3 posts a week and like 1 post has to use this hashtag or whatever. And it's, I don't have any of those asks, but I think my role as an athlete on the platform is to, yeah, show what I do in the mountains and provide some perspective and give genuine
insight to
the products and the gear, the stuff that I use. And I don't post things that I don't fully endorse. So if BD was to make something that was like complete garbage, like, I'll probably be honest about it, you know? Like, I don't want to, yeah, make a narrative where it's like everything that they do is amazing. But like, up until now, it's been a really great relationship, and I feel proud to represent the company. I like sharing the products. I like sharing the things that I work on. So it's been a good relationship. But I could see, yeah, if you
are using these pair,
you're using a pair of shoes that you don't like, but that brand's paying you a lot of money and you have to talk and tell good things about the shoes, it's like, you compromise your voice a little bit if you're doing that, you know?
So you alluded a little bit to your relationship with Brazil and with Grande Ocean, who was on the podcast a couple of days ago. Let's go, man. What is your interest in Brazil? How did this start? And what's your background? Because we haven't even explored your background as a musician. So if you could let us know about that, how do music and then Brazil enter into your life?
Yeah, no, this is, I love talking about this. So I've been playing percussion since I was in fifth grade, like all the way through
school
and through university. I studied percussion and got a percussion performance degree from the University of Colorado. But it was at university here in Boulder that I joined the Brazilian Bateria, who was taught by my good friend and teacher Carl Dixon. So that was my first exposure to samba and Brazilian music, was playing in the Bateria, and we would play around town, and he's kind of helped develop like Colorado Brazil Fest and his band Jinga. They play a lot, and so like there is a little bit of a Brazilian influence here in Boulder. There's a little bit of a scene, and so I just really enjoyed the music, connected with it. The rhythmic and dance elements of samba were like really compelling to me. I ended up, like, my senior thesis project, like, a lot of it was with Brazilian music. So that's where I just started playing and learning from Carl, like, teaching me how to play these different rhythms on the different instruments. So that had that seed planted, but that happened long, like, well before I met anyone, well before I met Ocean. But that's sort of, like, my music career. Alongside studying Brazilian music, I was also playing a lot of jazz. So those are kind of the two things that I was really passionate about. And my friend Thomas Woodson and I one day had this idea to make sort of a visual concert, like a film that would be a visual concert that was a interpretation, a musical interpretation of what I would hear to myself, like out running through the hills. So that was kind of the inspiration for the Tempo Films, was this idea of like combining my two passions into one sort of, yeah, visual experience where
totally
improvisational, like playing and running together. And so that film, the first Tempo, took place here in Boulder. It's on YouTube, but it sort of
is an expression
of the type of running that I was talking about earlier in our conversation, about moving fluidly over different types of technical terrain, whether that's on rocky trails or technical trails, or like moving up onto like the Flatirons and doing some climbing or whatnot. So that film came out. This is a couple years after graduating university, and Ocean saw that film and sent me a message on Instagram like, oh wow, this idea of running and drumming and percussion in the same film really resonates with me. Like, I really connect with this. I play music and run myself. Like, thank you for sharing, or I forget exactly what he said, but it was, you know, like super, super nice message. And I was like, wow, like this is the first time I'd ever met someone truly from Brazil. And it was just like kind of random, but also not, but it was like that seed had been planted. And I replied and was like, oh, like it would be my dream one day to come do like another Tempo film, but have you be the main character and sort of show us what music and running looks like for you, like where you live in Santa Teresa and in the jungle or whatnot. And so that was like the
blossom, the whole
project was going down there and running with Ocean and playing music with him. It was like that whole idea is that message that he sent
about how
he embodies sort of the similar passions that I have with music and running.
But yeah, it was like
a kind of a full circle moment for me, is like learning how to play that music, and then like all the way to meeting Ocean, to going down there. It was like, yeah, just a full circle experience, where when I first started playing in the Bateria, I was like, who knows where this will take me. I just wanted to do it because it was fun. And I had some friends in there, and it was just like, you're dancing and playing. It's like a good time. So yeah, it was just, it's fun to see how like the different dots connect. You know, sometimes when you first do something, you don't know where it's going to put you. And so
it's something I'll never
forget, is that like progression of like, okay, you do this and then this happens and then you meet this person. And it's like, yeah, it's just a perfect example why like the beauty of life and how like making connections, it's like that amazing feelings you get when you make these connections.
I want to get into your time in Brazil, but first, what was it like presenting the idea of this project? Because in the end, it was sponsored by Black Diamond. What was that process like, presenting this project and getting their support for this project? What was that process like?
Yeah, no, that's a really important question. So they've been fully on board with this whole idea of music and running since the first film. And so when I presented the second idea of like going to Brazil, I mean, it was like a home run. Like they, you know, like jaws hit the floor. Like they love the idea. Like there is no hesitations, no questions, no like. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about my relationship with Black Diamond is they fully support me and my ideas to like do running films a different way, to try to just do something unique and cut away from the mold of like, oh, this man runs the fastest time up the mountain and he conquers the mountain. And it's like this flex of the ego. And it's like, that's just not what my vision for running is. And so they were on board 100% from the start. Like, yeah, it was incredible. Like it couldn't have gone any better, really. It was perfect, honestly.
So you come down, people listening in Brazil will know Ogin is in, he's in the city, he's in Santa Teresa, he's Carioca through and through in his accent and everything. You arrive in Brazil, what are your impressions? What was it like taking in the city and taking in the culture here?
I mean, it was pretty wild. Like it's not like anything I've ever experienced. Like from the humidity to the jungle to the people to the city, it was just like very vibrant and sort of just like, oh, you're in it, like you're in the city. Like, so I don't know, like that's the easiest way I can to describe it. It's like you have no choice but to be just fully immersed in what's going on. Like I think what I found really fascinating is how the jungle and the city is like, they're kind of like fighting each other. And in the first act of the film, like Ocean's in this kind of like abandoned, like
coffee mill, like
where they used to like, I guess, yeah, make coffee, or it's like this ancient ruin kind of building. And it's like this idea that the jungle is like expanding, you know, it's like the roots and the vines, through the cracks in the sidewalk. It's like the nature is there, but you can easily forget about it and just be in the full city mode. But then if you kind of step back, you're like, you see like where nature is like kind of fighting to cling on to like the urban interface there. And so I think the beautiful thing about what we experienced in Santa Teresa is that like being in that vibrant neighborhood, the culture there, but then quickly being able to escape up into the jungle on like Ocean's daily runs where he goes running every day and like kind of be by yourself, but then be back in the city. And it's like that pretty, the position between those is fascinating. How like 1 second you can be just like sweating like crazy deep in this like forested area, and then next second pop out and you're like, oh, it's like let's grab some acai and just like chill on the sidewalk and hang out. It's like in some ways it was like brought me like similar feelings to like living in Boulder, where you're in a city but you can find these little escapes, go up into the mountains, go to the jungle. I mean, I absolutely loved it. Like the food, the culture, the people, the music, like I'll go back in a heartbeat. I want to go back so bad.
I mean, I definitely
had like the stereotypes that people hear about Brazil and all those things, but I didn't experience that. Nothing but like friendly people. It was an amazing experience. Like I loved it there. And I know I saw just a very, very, very small portion of Brazil. It kind of blows my mind how big Brazil is, like when you think about it, like going over into the more mountainous regions, just the different regions. It's like they're far away. Like Rio is, I don't know, like I still wrap my head around like how big your country is. Like it's huge.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I grew up on the East Coast in the US, and it was, I think I was 25 the first time I was in Colorado, or even older. And people forget that when it's another country, in Brazil, like where I am, sometimes people in the US will be like, oh, the Amazon, and be like, yeah, that's not, has nothing to do with my life. And I have,
where
been
are
there,
you again?
It was out of my own personal interest. I'm in Belo Horizonte. It's kind of mid in the mountains in Brazil. It's about 4 hour drive from Rio, from where you were. But it's more in the mountains. Yeah. I mean, culturally, it's more like a, I would say, or culture, the identity within the country, it's more like a Virginia or a, Wyoming, maybe of the country. Okay. But it's a little bit different. But a lot of things you said definitely strike true, and definitely Ogin, his relationship with Parky Shizuoka, the Floresta there. That's his Green Mountain, definitely.
Yeah.
He has a very special place in his heart. In the film, you guys do a fantastic job of capturing the flow of running, the flow of music. This conversation that you're having with Odin, even though there's no words, I think the only words is someone on the street yelling out to you guys when they're passing. Outside of that, there's no dialogue, verbal dialogue. How was that process of capturing that? I think it's something that I think everybody listening has experienced when running is that flow. Maybe some people listening are musicians, have experienced that with music, probably with dancing, but it's a very different thing to experience it. But to capture it is, wow, it's incredibly difficult without coming off as cliche, without coming off as what the hell are they doing? How was that process to try to capture that?
It was super collaborative. So I feel like, Ozan was our rock. Like, he was the one that anchored everything together. And I think we really leaned on him for where should we film, like, all the different spots. I mean, it is hilarious. Like, Ozan had this, like, Google document that had, like, day by day, like, breakdown of, like, we're going to go here, do this, like, then we're going to rehearse act one music. And it was, like, he is so thorough, and it was, like, so psyched, and it was, like, the amazing thing. And I hope I can repay the favor of, like, playing tour guide. But, it was super collaborative, and I think the filmmakers, Thomas Woodson and Joey Schuessler, like, having their expertise from the film side of being able to figure out, like,
what will go
well with the music, and like, here's our musical ideas, and the progression of like having Ocean start with the Udu in the jungle, and like the progression of this idea of like working our way down the hill to the city. So like starting up in the jungle and then kind of in that middle urban interface where the jungle is kind of there. They're like kind of clashing, and then boom, we're down like more in the city, like running the streets. So like, that idea also anchored us, is like, running down the hill, down into the city. So I think some basic conceptual things helped keep us kind of anchored for the project. But then a lot of it is like spontaneous, like, ooh, that's a cool spot, let's go film that. Like, ooh, like, this looks like a nice setting. And being like mobile, having small cameras, like being able to kind of go around, do things very light and fast, was also super helpful to just be like, okay, we'll shoot here, we'll go there, we'll go there, we'll go there. That was like also pretty instrumental into like the success of making it happen. But certainly the Ocean, I mean, it was all thanks to him. Like, he
made it all come together.
I mean, talking about that, I mean, being the critic, I'm going to turn on my John Lovett here, the critic of watching Tempo 1, Tempo 2. I'd say like a transition that you made in Tempo 1, it's very solitary. You capture an amazing feeling, but definitely in Tempo 2, you capture a communication. It has more of a community feel to it. Whether it's the conversation, again, without dialogue, that you're having with Ogin, like as you're running through the forest there, or even the guy on the street who screams out your name, there's a little bit more feel of a community there. Could you talk about the aspect of that, of getting to know a little bit of the Brazilian community? And then we talked a little bit about community in Boulder, but like differences that you observed in your short time in Brazil as far as community around things and the importance of that for you.
Yeah, I think one of the striking things for me was like raw passion, like the unwavering sort of like, this is who I am, this is what I like to do, this is my home, like this. Yeah, this is what I love. And I think there's no filter there. There's no facade. Whereas in Boulder or like in the U.S., it's almost as like people have to sort of like
create a
facade, create this character, or like almost embellish a bit, like, oh, this is what this is the crew, this is what I want to be doing, this is the kind of the aesthetic or whatnot. But for me in Brazil, in the community, it was like the raw passion, the passion for music, the passion for running that's like interwoven into Ocean's life was like very apparent. Like he wasn't faking anything. He wasn't trying to fit in with me or my friends. Like he was just like, this is who I am. And in some ways that made it an instant click in friendship, you know, that
we could connect and
bond over our similar passions for running and music instantly, because he just opened himself up in his life with no filter, you know?
Where sometimes
we, I don't know, overcomplicate things or make things
maybe seem like
they're nicer or just more positive than they are. I don't know if that makes sense. Like something about just the purity of Ocean's passion or like his joy for running was so apparent that it made it like really easy to connect, and really like that friendship started like just instantly, you know, like there was no like tiptoeing around like, oh, like, what do you want to do? Like, you're going to be in this film. Like, I don't know, just awkwardness around that. Like, it was like, oh no, like Ocean's one of my best friends, you know, like it was like an instant kind of relationship. And I think
having,
and maybe this gets at another question, is like my impression of like the Brazil running culture and what that the community is like, it seems like everyone like just loves to run and be out in nature so much. Like
it's just that
seems like that's the first most apparent factor, like that comes first, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, whereas like in the US sometimes like is that number two or three on the list? Like first is like, oh, I'm gonna go race and beat all these people. Two, it's like I'm going to do it for my sponsorship. And three, I'm doing it because I love to do it. It's like for Brazil, it's like, no, that's number one. It's like, we're doing it because we love it. And everything else is like kind of a cherry on top type of thing.
You can tell me what you think about that.
There's a lot we can dig into here. But I mean, I would say based on what we've already talked about and what I mentioned before we started recording is, it's definitely a much younger community here, and we're growing quickly. But what you talked about is definitely here. There is a passion for connected with nature, and because we don't have, I'm going to put these in air quotes, problems of a lot of money around trail. There's no reason to be involved in the sport of trail running. There's no reason to be involved in anything outdoor in Brazil for money. There's just no drive behind that at the point we are in our growth here. But one thing I talked about with you before is like I would love to hear in your perspective. I gave you an analogy for people in the U.S. to understand. It's kind of like you're talking to Scott Jurek in 2008, and you're telling him, man, the future. Or maybe this is a Back to the Future, Marty McFly situation of trail running. But it's something that's growing here. We're about in that 2008 stage of where the U.S. Running culture was. But we have amazing tools like Instagram and podcasts that we're just trying to figure out how to use now in our community here. And I'll be honest with my own story. I don't want to go too deep into my own story, but a big reason why I started this podcast and why I'm much more active in the running community is because I want to direct that in the right. I want to put that in the right direction. I don't want to see it go in the ways that I see in the U.S., like some of the, again, problems that you have in the U.S. as far as other alternatives or motives behind things, alternative motives behind things that take away from this purity that we were talking about before. For me, I know early on, I hated going to races. I did not go to races. Looking back, there were the few races I went to. I don't know why I went there, because for me, running on trails is the only thing that made sense in that phase of my life, 2015, about putting my head in a waterfall. It was like the only thing that made sense in a point where in my life where I needed something like that. And it was something so pure. The few races I went to, I was just like, this is a lot of spandex, and I didn't like it. It didn't hit me right. But then I realized two things a couple years ago. Was like, one, whether or not I wanted to be my voice in the running community, trail running community, it has authority and I'm not using it. And I want to see more people enjoying having that same experience that I was having 2015, still have to this day on the trails, this pureness on the trail. I want to see more people have that. And I see right now where Brazil is with sport, a big entry point for people to discover that we have trails in Brazil, that people have this in their backyard. Because I'm not sure if Odo is probably not a good example, but a lot of people in Brazil don't realize the incredible vastness of nature that we have here. And they're discovering that now. And one key way that they're discovering that is through races. So as much as I hated races a couple of years ago, I now see them as like, well, this is a way to bring the community together and make sure that the conversation is right. Not that I'm going to control the conversation, but I want to give people that alternative. I want people from different backgrounds who show up at these races be like, hey, I don't need to talk shop. I don't need to talk about equipment the whole time. I don't need to talk pace, stats. There's this pure love of nature that we can share together. So I'd love to get tips from you as your doc and Marty McFly, looking back at Scott Jurek here. I'd love to get tips from you about what we can do in Brazil to protect this purity that you saw, to protect this love of nature that you saw, and that seems to be unfiltered, in your opinion. What kind of advice could you give us?
No, I mean, first thing I just want to say, like, it seems, my impression is that you're doing amazing work, and I feel like having the podcast, having your platform, and just from afar following, it seems like you're doing really cool stuff. And so I think it was interesting for me to hear your story right there, and I appreciate you sharing. Because I do think, especially if it's true what you're saying about how, it's you're back in the 2008 or whatever, it's like you can help shape and craft that the vision in the scene, which is like, that's incredible. So kudos to you for doing what you're doing. I think that's amazing. But as far as like advice, I feel like
what's cool is it seems
like that grassroots communal sort of vibe is so strong, right? It seems like it's so strong in Brazil. So finding a way to just not let that die. And I think a ways that dies in the US, or how it did die in the US, is like the whole lottery system, like, and all the hoops and barriers that it takes to get into a race. So like, oh, you want to run the Hard Rock 100, you got to do all these races, you got to put your name into a hat, like it might take 20 years to get into the race. And it's like,
I don't want to go, like,
it's so much effort to go do that race. And so that creates a certain community and a certain vibe around that. There's good things and there's bad things. So if there's a way for like these popular races in Brazil to stay open and like allow people from all walks of life, you can keep the costs low and not have to go to a big lottery system. Like, I feel like that could be one opportunity to sort of keep it open for everyone. And that could, yeah, just get people coming back to the race. Whereas there is that barrier, the lottery systems in the US, where so many people are into it that now they have to like cut down on how many people do it, because there's like such a demand for these people doing the races. And I think because of that, it spurred off like the FKTs and like doing different objectives in the mountains that are like non-race based, is
people looking to
do something different outside of the like the rigid race format. So I feel like that kind of thing is the biggest for me. I mean, it would be cool to see in 10 years from now if like some of the biggest races in Brazil, if they're not like, if they're still kind of more open. I don't know, like, do you guys have lotteries for some of the bigger races now, or what's that like?
No. We have a few races that reach a saturation point where it's like, because of the where they are, they enter into parks. Yep. They have a cutoff. But it hasn't reached the point where they've implemented a lottery to fill the spots. It's more of a, which is another problem, you could say. It's first come, first serve on who's buying tickets to get in, who's buying bid numbers. But I would say that is something I'm worried. Keeping a democratic sport, keeping it open for everyone, is really important. But it's sometimes I look at all the battles, uphill battles we have. I'm not sure if we're ready for that conversation, but it's something at the same time we need to put a little earmark there. And as we're growing, remember that, like, we got to keep this open for everybody. I'll be kind of, I follow you guys, in Boulder. I follow you. I definitely follow, you know, Single Track Podcast, what Dylan Bowman's doing also.
Yeah.
And it's hugely inspirational. And I always take a little like, okay, that's really cool, but do we want that in Brazil? I'm not sure. Is that the best direction to head? I'm not sure. Some of the things I hear and I'm like, wow, I can't wait till we're ready to have those problems in Brazil. I can't wait till we're ready to discuss, we need to implement this now. Like, we'll never have a problem in Brazil of women not receiving the same prize money as men. Like, we'll never have that problem because prize money just started in Brazil. And it's really obvious for us because other Europe, US has already been through that. It's really obvious for us. Like, no, if you're going to give prize money to men, you have to give the same amount for women. And that's not even on the radar for our community right now. There's other things where, like, when I hear Finn, discuss the details of like contracts and things like that, I kind of go like, there's a part of me go again, I can't wait to have that problem. There's another part of me going, man, you spoiled bitches. Yeah. Because like here, like there's our best trail runner who's phenomenal. It's like, he just a couple months ago got like, we were like a leader of a team was able to put together a contract where he could maybe get to the point where he could live off of running. Maybe. Mm. And like, that's even like, they're still working that out. And he's our best runner. So it's like, we're looking at a situation where like our best trail runner is like probably getting a contract that would be laughable for a mid-level athlete in the US, for outdoor athletes.
Will you share who that is? I'm just curious. Like, I like to follow more people in the scene, but what's his name?
Not to put him on
Rogério Silverstein. Okay. Rogério Silverstein, I want to put him in the spotlight as much as I can. So if there's any Rogério is like Roger Ario, Silverstein.
Okay. Shout out to him.
I'll send you but it's and then for women, Letícia Soltori is our top woman. She, and they're both phenomenal athletes, and obviously they're much bigger names in Brazil because there are heroes. They're the people that we look up to here. But again, it's like the situation. It's very different here. It's very different here. But I love those tips for what we can do to keep it. To defend this purity that we talked about at the beginning of the podcast. Because to me, I think in all trail cultures, it's, please.
I'm just curious about
like the diversity of like the different types of racing. Because we were talking about like what I like to do is like, as far as racing goes, is more like kind of the sky running style. Like those kind of races, I would be psyched to do some of that stuff. Like, do you see... Like, describe to me, like, the racing landscape, like, so from ultras to, like, sub-ultras, do you have, like, what's the presence of, like, more of, like, the sky running style, like, maybe there's more technical scrambling, like, I just because I'm curious, like, explain to me, like, what that landscape looks like in racing for Brazil.
So my comparison, I discovered trail running in Brazil, so, like, almost all of my racing is, and all of my outdoor running on trails at this level, other than like running cross country in high school in the US, It's in Brazil. I competed in Leadville in 2018, but that was my comparison is not very good for what we have in the U.S. But I will say in the U.S., like, yeah, we have some very technical technical races in there. Skyrunning is an interesting one because skyrunning just now entered in Brazil, and this year is going to be the first year where we actually have a skyrunning championship that will happen here. And there are some courses that are popping up now that are very technical. That would definitely fit something that you like. There's a race Comboltas, which is a trail festival at the end of the year. I think you would really love it just because of the feel of the energy of a small town in the countryside of Brazil, where you get to take in amazing landscape. And there's some good technical in there. Doesn't quite reach scrambling. But it's definitely very technical descents. The rocks in the mountains where I live, the Espinhaço Mountains, it's much more loose rocks. I think Johnny mentioned in our interview that the things that stood out for him was that the way the rock formation was in the mountains we were in for that race that he competed in it's a different mountains. It's the Machiquita Mountains. And there it's a little bit, in my opinion, more similar to the U.S., but in his opinion, it was much more loose rocks. And the day that he ran, there was a large amount of mud. So in your opinion, that'd probably be a little bit more of a jungle atmosphere.
Yeah. Dude, the mud
looks heinous. It looks so bad.
That day was awesome, though. That day was because that course is actually known for being incredibly runnable. You get a lot of trails in it, but that course is in Dolmetsch. And it's known for having good trails, and it's a beautiful, beautiful course, but it's 100% runnable as long as the weather's good. And that day, just right before the 80-kilometer race started, we just got like 3 hours of just downpour. I started at night in the 80K, and it was fun, man. It was a lot of fun. A lot of times you're like, oh, look, a small puddle. And then the next step you're literally up to your waist in mud. And it was a lot of fun.
Wow.
We have variations. Go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry.
I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just like, again, a selfish question, but tell me like if you were to name like
the three
like classic races in Brazil, like ultras, like what name, tell me some of like the classics, like it's like these are the biggest races in Brazil,
like regardless of
I'm hoping my Brazilian audience has completely dropped off because this conversation is English, because I'm going to make a lot of enemies if I name three.
Really?
But because it's such a small, it's a small community, and all the races are young. So it's like, we have some races that like literally they've had 2 years, but I would already put them as classics because they were so well put together. Mm. So the one that we're talking about right now in Dolmetsch is kind of classic because I think it started in 2012 was the first year, 2013. And it has good trails in it. Because before then we had ultras, but they were more run on dirt roads, not much trail. So it's actually pure trail races. Like in Dolmetsch, starts to enter into that. As far as bigger races, there's Mons, which is going to happen in October, which is, again, they've only had two editions, but the way that the organizers of the event put good technical trails with variation, with a variation of the technicality of like runnable course, and then just places where you have no choice but to scramble. But then in addition to that, building a relationship with the city, which is like you go to some races, I'm sure it's in the U.S. too, but like you go to some races in Brazil, the people who live there have no idea that the race is even happening. It's kind of like, what the hell are you doing here? Get the hell out of my way. And you know, even in the U.S., it changes the atmosphere of a whole race when you go there and the people who live there are excited that you're there. And then you share that with them. They go, whoa, you're going to go all the way. They know the mountain better than you do, but they've only been up at once because the one time they went was like a huge life event for them. And they're going, whoa, you're going all the way up to the top. I can't believe that. And then for Mons, the second year I went back, everybody remembered me and were like, oh, I'm Roger the Gringo. Yeah. And they were, Roger, my son's going to participate in the race this year. My wife's going to participate. And to see that relationship that they built so quickly with the race was really, really cool. So, I would say that, Kembolt is quickly the one that I mentioned already. It's kind of developing mm-hmm. itself as a classic to finish up the thing is here, we don't really have a calendar year because the weather's always good for running. So it's kind of one of the goods and the dangers because it's like we can race all year round here. And if we're not careful as the guys who are more guys and gals who are more, I said gals, I'm not using English months these days. That's a word my dad would use. No. Gals. You have to be careful because we're already seeing it. It's like the races are getting a little bit more competitive. We definitely, like I said, we're years behind, so we don't have that whole generation that happened in the U.S. where they overtrained, overran, overraced, and now in the U.S. you're seeing like that learning cycle happen. We haven't had that learning yet, so like we've already lost a couple guys who are starting to peak. They got really excited, signed up for all the races, and now we're missing. I'm missing them at the starting lines. You know, my brothers and sister there. I'm missing them at the starting line because of that. And one of the key things, in my opinion, is because we can race 12 months here if we want. And we kind of feel the pressure. I'll say I feel the pressure to compete in all the races because of this, what I was talking about before, not because Roger feel like I need to win. I'm not the best runner here, but I compete. But I feel the need to throw a magnifying glass on any event that endorses trail culture in Brazil, and those events are usually running events. So I kind of feel this pressure, like I want to throw the magnifying glass on this. And one way I can do this is by participating in the event and being competitive in the event. So it's like, that is a danger that we have here. But saying that, any time of the year you want to come down and race, I'm going to find you a classic to participate in. I know.
Well, No, I was like, that's why I asked is because, I'm trying to make the calendar, you know, just going to try to see what races I want to do. I'm not going to race in the U.S., but I'll come
which I love. I said that to Ojan. Ojan was like, yeah, he was talking about doing a race. I was like, Kyle Richardson was talking about doing a race. I was like, my brain just exploded a little bit. That's going to be awesome, man. That's going to be awesome to have you do that. But I'm going to call you out on social media when you do. I'm going to say, we got him to do a race here, motherfucker.
Please.
Because here it's trail. It's trail in the veins, purity. With that, though, and coming back to Tempo 2, you guys have shown at some film festivals. And one thing with Ojan's going to be coming up. I haven't released this yet, but by the time this podcast comes out, I will have released this. So at the end of May, I have an event that I do called São Brutão, where it's the idea is for it not to be a race, where there's a small city, historical city, where I'm tight with the community. I spent years there when I was running alone, just discovering the trails and built a tight connection with the city. It's more of like in English, I'd say like a villa with – and I wanted to share as I entered more into the community, I wanted to share that with other people. So I do an event called São Brutão, where we all come together, we run on a trail together, there's an FKT also, if you want to try to break the FKT, it is brutal. So you're more than welcome to do that, where it's 56 kilometers. But usually we do a shorter trail route, and then we all have lunch together on a wood-burning stove. And on the 20th, we're going to be having that event and showing films. There's a couple films that local artists made we're going to show, and we want to show Tempo 2 in that event. So if that fits your calendar, but Tempo 2 will be shown in a couple months here. But what are the plans also with Tempo 2 now?
So it is kind of doing the film festival circuit. So is at Banff and then Kendall and then a couple others. We'll do a kind of a public release in July. Still trying to work through the, we're trying to get Ocean over here to Boulder. We're running into some roadblocks, but we haven't given up. And like through Black Diamond, we're going to, just keep trying to get him over here. We're running some issues with visa. I don't know. Like, we could talk all hour about this because I have lots of questions about how this works. But hopefully Ocean will come over. We'll do like a little film tour together. And then, the film will be online. And that's kind of like
the end of it. Obviously, it
doesn't end quite there. But in terms of like the work that goes into it, I guess it's sort of over. But that just opens the door for doing a third and finale, like kind of ending with, Tempo 3. And then that kind of closes the trilogy of the films. So thinking about that idea and what the future could look like and kind of and embracing more of this community idea that you brought up with Tempo. And when you were like, it seemed like this progression from the first one to the second one is embodying more community and the communication, the nonverbal communication. And so taking that idea and the culture and like, trying to go even deeper with that in a third film, it would be my goal and dream for it.
Great, man. That's great. I'm excited to see what comes of it. I'm excited to see what, as the public, more people see Tempo 2, what the response is. I know I felt an immediate connection when I saw it. So anybody listening, I really try to follow the progression of this film, watch it, share it with your friends. And man, it was great. Both you and Ojin, I got to say, my podcast with Ojin, he got me talking a lot more than I like to talk in my own podcast. And you got me to talk a lot more than what I usually talk in my own podcast. Thank you. But at the same time, I felt like I talked too much in this. But thank you so much for this conversation, man. I learned a lot. I'm hoping a lot of people here in Brazil, are taking notes for what we can do to protect the purity of trail, which is a conversation that needs to be up front. I don't think we can talk too much about that. As sometimes it can even become cliche, but like why and when do things lose their purity is something that we need to have on our radar just constantly on a day-to-day process. So thank you so much for sharing tips on that. I know I learned a lot, man. And I'm looking forward to you coming to Brazil to race.
Thanks, Roger. I feel like having a conversation is what I always hope for in these type of interactions, especially I've never met you before, but it's, getting to hear your perspective is, for me, like the whole reason why I wanted to like talk to you, not for me to shamelessly plug my film or talk about myself as an athlete. Like that's so far down on the list. And that gets back at the purity thing. So, really appreciate the thoughtful questions and, steering the ship. And, I'd love to hear you talk more. So, but I know we're going to try to keep this to an hour or whatnot. But, maybe we'll do another one. We'll do a round two podcast at some point.
Man, that would be awesome, man. That'd be awesome. And it would be even better if we can do it in person in Brazil. Because I'm sure people who are listening to this – I'm sure people listening to this are going, man, if he comes to Brazil, I want to invite him to my neck of the woods. I want to share my Green Mountain with Kyle Richardson. I'm sure there are plenty of people listening to this who are going to be thinking that. So we have a lot of Green Mountains to share here with you.
Sweet. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm definitely going to come out. So can't wait.
Thanks, man.